Hi everyone, and welcome back to Lit Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Thea. Today, I'm joined by Marco Busman to speak about his book, The Connection Quotient. It just came out in its new edition. Marco Busman is a leadership expert, inspirational speaker, and master certified coach. He specializes in facilitating and supporting organizations in creating high-performance cultures. In his book, Marco demonstrates how the connection quotient enables an honest, courageous, and human interconnection to form while still focusing on financial outcomes and results, developing these relations to improve the business networks they serve. Thank you very much, Marco, for joining me today on the Lit Radio podcast. I'm very excited to speak with you about the new edition of your book, The Connection Quotient. And my very first question to you is, why did you decide to write that book back in 2020? And why do you think its messaging is still as relevant today?
Well, thank you for the question, Thea. The reason why I started to write, I believe in a connected world. And with the book, I wanted to contribute to creating such a respectful world. A world that, from my perspective, starts small by connecting with yourself, then by making connections externally. You build bridges between yourself and the other, both professionally and personally. And it's only when things flow smoothly between people that things can flow smoothly in business. Now, to create this connected world, the first thing you need to do is to connect with your whole self. So if based on this strong connection with yourself, you engage with others, people will create a deep and respectful connection with the other as prime representative of the outside world. And if you can make contact with the other, you also open up their horizon, because from that point on, you're building a foundation for a future collaboration. And from then on, the sky's the limit, first with the other, then with the team, and after that with the organization, and on to the rest of the world. However large and extensive you make that rest of the world, or have however close to home. But yet, through my work as a manager, as a leadership, executive and team coach, I found that many people believed in the same, but they found it hard on how to do so. They were looking for practical tips, insights, scientific proven approaches, and so on. Not one book that deepens only one theory, but a more holistic book that brought the essence of all. And that is why what I created with this book, The Connection Quotient. Now, you also asked me, is my book still relevant? Well, I would say, look at what's happening in today's world. There are so many wars, refugee issues, polarization, distrust in governments, and so on. And if you look at business, there are so many new technologies that are emerging, which put pressure on the human side of business. And through COVID, we have new forms of hybrid organizations. Also, the workforce is demanding new ways of working together. The time of business pressure has physical, emotional, and psychological impact on the workforce and results of businesses, and so on. So from my perspective, there's an even bigger need for exploring the topic of how to build and maintain powerful and sustainable connections. So the book is more than ever relevant these days.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that statement. And I really like the idea of a connected world. So hopefully we can achieve that with your book. But firstly, let's start with the term, the connection quotient. So yeah. Could you define that? What does it mean?
Well, you know, let's take it from the business perspective. If you look at the connection quotient, it's much more than just maintaining your business network. It's an ability to understand other people's positions and expand your own capacity to discuss differences. Because a connection enables you to stand up for yourself and at the same time to continue to see the other for who he or she is, despite any differences between you. A connection makes it possible to play hard on the ball and soft on the individual. Now, if you look even on the word, the connection itself, as a term, it has a soft quality. But it is also the hardest prerequisite for creating fruitful long-term business deals. After all, no contact, no contract. So your connection quotient is a prerequisite for doing businesses successfully. It is a rock-solid requirement for getting things done. On top of that, it's a mirror that reflects your own functioning and learning. And next to this business context, this clearly is relevant in your private life as well. Whether staying connected to your friends, your family, your sports team, your community, the principles remain the same. So in short, the connection quotient is offering you a framework, a lens to look at how we connect amongst each other in order to serve a purpose, whether it's a business purpose or a personal purpose.
Thank you for that definition. I think it really shows how powerful that connection quotient is. And then moving on to connecting with yourself, which you mentioned during your first response.
Yeah.
So why is it so important to be in connection with yourself, and how do we achieve that?
So thank you for that question on why the importance of the connection with yourself. Now, from a leadership perspective, if you look at a lot of managers as well, a lot of management books, they define their starting points for leadership as leading others and managing an organization. In other words, someone's leadership begins as soon as they are appointed as a manager of a team, of a number of teams, of a department, or of a whole organization. If they bear responsibility for an entire organization, this then marks the limit of their leadership as well. Now, in terms of the connection quotient and how I take a look at it, this line of reasoning does not apply. Because what I truly believe is that your leadership does not begin with leading and connecting with teams or organization. Your true leadership starts by being in contact with yourself first. Leadership begins by leading yourself and connecting with yourself. If you can't lead yourself, ultimately, you'll be unable to lead others as well. So therefore, in part one of my book, I will start with this important connection, the connection with yourself as an integral element of your leadership. Now, how do you achieve this? If you want to achieve it, you have to look at yourself as a leader from two angles. I call them the human doing and the human being piece. Now, the human doing piece is much more the IQ piece, the functional perspective. Why every organization, every team, every function exists to produce results. So as a leader, you have to produce results. So from your IQ, you can design elements like what is actually our vision? What is our strategy, our long-term strategy? What's the business model? What is our year plan? Our tasks, our roles, responsibilities, and so on. That's what I call the human doing part. But next to it, as a leader, you're also a human being, the person you are. And that's also where the EQ, the emotional quotient, kicks in. So instead of the IQ or functional, this is about the EQ and relational piece. Why teams, organizations, and functions, they exist out of people. And if you have people, then you also get the human dynamics. And this is also where you as a leader need to focus on elements such as how do we create joy and fun in the organization? How do we have healthy conflicts? Hopefully they are healthy. How do we work with diversity and inclusion? How do we celebrate successes? How do we work with disagreements? How do we work also where people are also in a position that they are less energetic to fully focus on the work? And as a leader, you need to focus on both the doing and the being, the IQ and the EQ, on the functional and the relational, on the results and the people. So again, leading yourself, that's where it starts with the connection. The leading yourself from the connection with yourself, it starts by asking yourself questions like, what do I see? What do I feel? What do I think? What are my values? What are my beliefs? What are my deepest desires and fears? And by raising and answering these kind of questions, by the way, which requires time to introspect, you first establish who you are as a human being, and only then you can ask yourself what type of leader you are or want to become, essentially who you are as a human doing. So again, if you want to lead others, first start leading yourself. Understand your IQ, EQ, your doing and your being, your functional and your relational elements.
Yeah, I really like what you just said about if you want to lead others, you should be able to lead yourself first. And I think that's a great concept, but it requires some hard work. And then in the book, you say that we have patterns on or behaviors that we are not completely happy with, but yeah, we justify them by saying, well, that's just the way I am. I can't change myself. So why Why is that detrimental when it comes to the connection with ourselves, and how can we change those patterns?
Yeah, I think it's a powerful question. It's a truly powerful question. So let me answer by just also giving a little bit of an example. So think about the next situation. Your manager, your partner, or your friends may think you should behave differently or adopt a different attitude in certain situation. But from your end, that's never going to work because you happen to be the shy type, or you're not someone who will have an opinion ready and waiting, or you're someone who happens to be very easily irritated, and that's why you regularly say things that you regret later, or you just happen to be whatever. Think of any number of variations on this theme. So other people, they will ask you to change your pattern, but that's hard. And that's by the way, you're not alone in this. Because every one of us, we all have patterns in which we say, that's just the way I am. I can't change this. And in a way, this statement is correct. Well, I would say in theory, because you look at yourself and you see your own behavior in a way that corresponds with your limiting beliefs and interpretations. This way, by doing so, by listening to our inner voice, our limiting beliefs, we create calm and structure in our lives. And after all, anything you can't change will have to be accepted by you and others. So why waste your energy? Now let's go back. Because by saying that's just the way I am, you're making this explicit time after time. Well, the disadvantage of saying this sentence out loud, that's just the way I am this shy person, or I am easily irritated, or whatever your statement is. But by saying out loud this sentence, you are justifying your own behavior and you're further anchoring the pattern you find yourself in. Or as Albert Einstein said, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you always got. So the question then becomes, if you keep repeating it and you're not willing to change it, is that still effective? By just remaining the same pattern, although the situation asks for a different behavior, you're not effective. So that's why we should stop saying that's just the way I am. And we should start creating time in our calendars to start reflecting on our behaviors and to start introspecting on where it comes from. Now, if you really want to change that dysfunctional, that's just the way I am pattern, you will need to understand how it works. Well, if you want to understand how it has been created, it's simple. It has been created in the past, mostly, by the way, in our youth when we were younger. Based on our experiences, we created interpretations of that experiences. And based on the interpretations, we created decisions and therefore behaviors and responses. And therefore, a pattern has been created by multiple experiences. And each time that we repeat the same pattern, we start believing more and more in the pattern to be true. That also means if you want to break down the pattern, you have to do your work. And you have to start looking inwards to explore your pattern, to explore how they were formed. What were the experiences and the interpretations that where it came from? What were you thinking and feeling in those kind of situations? What were your beliefs, your fears, your needs, and so on? So what are the decisions that you've made? What is the kind of behavior that you would like to change? And what are the responses that you would like to change? If you really start looking inwards and you start to be really honest with yourself, you then can also start deciding this is a dysfunctional pattern and let me create an alternative pattern and an alternative belief. Yet that is also a process that takes courage and time. So in short, we all know the pattern, that's the way I am. But if you are willing to look inwards and start exploring where it comes from, and you also are willing to look for alternatives, only then you can change the pattern. Again, it's doable, and in the book, I will explain and I will show you how you can do it yourself.
Definitely. I really like the idea of blocking out some time in your calendar just to reflect on your behaviors. I think that's a very powerful move your people can take. And then in the book, In the book, one of the chapters in the first part, in connection with yourself, is about happiness and how, if you're in connection with yourself, you will feel happy. So what are some strategies for happiness?
So before I answer that question, let me also give you a little bit of background also on how I framed the book. Again, I said, like, what I was looking for is a holistic book. So what I've done is also a lot of research about all kind of insights on how to create powerful leadership, not only leadership in your business life, but also in your personal life. And what I've done is, just looking at all the researches, I crafted the essence of it. So rather than you looking at the whole book or doing the whole research yourself, in the book you find chapters, 43 chapters, that actually capture the essence of many researches that has been done by others. Now, back to your question, what are some strategies for happiness? For this chapter that I have written, I have done it based on the research by Sonia Lubomirsky. She is a leading researcher within the positive psychology movement, and she has dedicated herself to answering this question. So she has studied many theories that happiness researchers have come up with. And those that have been scientifically tested are included in her book, The How of Happiness. And as she says, science is not perfect, but it is more reliable than any advice based on a limited amount of life experiences of a random individual. So again, back to your question, what are some strategies for happiness? Through the systematic research, Lubomirsky has been able to establish 9 thinking and behavior patterns that happy people display, which in unhappy people do not, or display to a smaller degree. And she came up with 9 strategies. And in my book, in the chapter, I explain those 9 strategies, and I'll also make them more practical and applicable for you. So to give you the concrete answers, here are the 9 strategies. Happy people, they devote a great amount of time to their family and friends. They also nurture their relationships and enjoy them. Furthermore, they express their gratitude for all they have. Also, they are often the first to offer people a helping hand. They are also optimistic about the future. They savor life's pleasures and try to live in the present moment. They make physical exercise a weekly habit. They are also deeply committed to lifelong goals. And as a 9th strategy, they are able to maintain their balance in difficult situations. So again, these 9 strategies, they are by Lubomirsky. And in my book, I further explore them and I really make them practical and applicable for you.
Yeah, definitely. I really recommend reading that part. It's very insightful. And then I will move on to the second part of the book, which is in connection with the other. So why is it important to be in connection with the other to be a great leader?
Well, being in connection with others is essential for being a great leader, because leadership is fundamentally about inspiring and influencing people to achieve common goals. So a leader's ability to connect and build relationships with others has a significant impact on their effectiveness and the overall success of their leadership. So here are a few reasons why it's important to be in connection with others as a leader. The first one I would debate is all about collaboration and teamwork, because building connections with others fosters a sense of collaboration and teamwork. By connecting with teamworks, you as a leader can create an environment where people feel valued, heard, and motivated to contribute their best efforts. Collaboration enhances creativity, problem solving, and the overall productivity of the team. Here's a second reason, because you as a leader, it's all about building trust, because trust is a crucial component of effective leadership. When a leader establishes connections with others, they develop trust and credibility. Open and honest communication, active listening, and showing genuine care for others' opinions and well-being contribute to building trust. So with trust, People are more likely to follow you as a leader and your guidance, and they will take risks knowing that you as a leader has the best interest in mind. Also, it's also about empathy and understanding, because connecting with others allows a leader to develop empathy and understanding. And by active listening and seeking a different perspective, you as a leader can gain a deeper understanding of your team's members' needs, aspirations, and challenges. Furthermore, it's all about inspiring and motivating others, because you as a great leader, you inspire and you motivate your team to achieve extraordinary results, hopefully. And by being in connection with the others, you can identify individual strengths and weaknesses and aspirations. And then you can tailor your leadership style and the communication to inspire and motivate your team members effectively. And let's also make sure that we also understand that you as a leader, one of the things that we do while leading others, we build a positive culture. Because leaders, you and I, who are in connection with others, can shape and nurture a positive organizational culture. We can set the tone by modeling desired behaviors, by promoting a respectful and inclusive environment, and recognizing and celebrating achievements. When we achieve and establish strong connections with our team's members, it creates a sense of belonging, loyalty, and commitment with the organization. So again, when you ask, why is it important to be in connection with the other to be a great leader? I would say, in short, being in connection with the others is crucial for great leadership, because it enables collaboration, trust building, empathy, inspiration, and the creation of a positive work culture. And by investing in those relationships and actively engaging with others, you and I can effectively lead our teams towards shared goals and achieve long-term success.
But what are the most important elements of building a connection with the other?
There are so many elements of those. So in the book, you will actually find a total of 12 chapters to really start exploring this question. So, you know, in the book, I will explore what is it like to build friendships, not only friendships outside of the workforce, but what if you would also build friendships also in the workplace itself? Or how do we create powerful conversations where we are really willing to listen so that we can have a dialogue instead of a debate? How do we create relationship trust? Or how do we create powerful interactions where you and I actively are listening and supporting each other? That also means that we need to explore and understand body language and understand where we communicate or where we miscommunicate. And life is not always like positive. Sometimes there's also a little bit of harm or negativity. It might even go to toxic relationships. So again, in the book, we also explore that. What does it mean, a toxic relationship? And how can we also change that into a healthy relationship? How do you listen? How do you listen with intent, to the intention to understand, rather than listening, trying to fix the problems of someone else? Because as a leader, we are not there to constantly fix, but we are there to serve the other so that they find their own answers. Therefore, it also requires you, and that's what I do in the book as well, in this part of the book, I will invite you to start looking inwards to explore what kind of leader are you. Are you more the kind of leader who leads by actions, or are you the kind of leader who inspires by words? And there's many more different kinds of leaderships that you will actually encounter, we'll see in the book. And ultimately, we also spoke already, also a bit the previous question, a lot about the empathy. And you know, the thing is also with empathy, many people think that empathy is just a feeling part. But there's also something about what we call cognitive empathy. It's coined by Daniel Goleman. And cognitive empathy is much more functional and IQ related. So again, in the book, I will give you many, many practical chapters on how can you build a strong connection with the others. And to just give that shortly in 5 minutes for now, that wouldn't serve right to this question. But these are the kind of elements that are truly important here, Thea.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing those. And now I would like to talk about the third part of the book, which is in connection to your team and your organization.
Yeah.
So how important is it to be connected with them, with the team and the organization? And what does it mean to be connected to them?
So Teja, to be successful as a team and an organization and to achieve powerful results, differences will increasingly need to be bridged. By using your connection quotient, you're building a connection between different teams or between different hierarchical layers or building bridges between internal stakeholders. You as a leader, you play a key role here without necessarily needing all communication to flow through you. Is it possible to continue to listen to all the different perspectives while you're responsible for so many people, so many different perspectives, so many different departments? So how do you ensure that everyone acts based on the same core values or are all working towards the same goal? And are the stories that you tell about the organization and its goal attractive and inspiring? Well, I would say that's part of why you as a leader kick in, because the key lies in expressing, accepting the emotional side next to the rational side. So how do you create a culture where people feel like I want to contribute to the team or to the organization? And again, in the book, you will find around 13 chapters to really bridge this and to give you some practical assignments and practical insights on how do you, for instance, create a powerful story and do you craft a powerful story, but also how do you tell a powerful story that people believe in and are willing to follow, rather than you trying to push it forward and actually also trying to get the people to do it by using your power. I believe that if you can truly create an emotional field, an emotional infrastructure in your team and your organization where people believe in the goals, then they will kick in and they will actually create the end results. But how to do it? That's part of the connection quotient for this level.
And when I was going through the book, and especially through this third part,
yeah,
one of the chapters, it really caught my attention, and that chapter is called Intellect versus Emotion.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting here. What's more important when connecting with your team and your organization, intellect or emotions? And how do we strike the right balance between them?
Well, thank you for that question, because this is a truly, truly, truly fundamental question. And there's also a paradox here involved. Now, in the book, I also describe there's this exercise that me and my team are using while we're working in the Netherlands or abroad, all over the world. And it's a fundamental exercise and a fundamental question. We ask the question, think back about the best team that you have been part of, really the best team, and you can define your own best. So it could be the team, could be a business team, it could be a personal team, it could be a sports team, a group of volunteers. So any team, it could be in your current organization or in a previous organization. And the best could be defined by I had the highest salary or the biggest bonus, or we got the best output. Or it might even be as a sports team, you were average, but hey, this was the best experience. Now, the fundamental question here is, if you compare those best teams and you compare them to those average teams or even the low performing teams, what are the attributes that stands out in the best performing teams that are not present or less present within the average or in the low performing teams? Now, here's where it becomes interesting. And if you're listening to this radio, I would say, what if you would pause for now and first do the exercise? So think about your own best team and think about what are the attributes that stands out that makes a distinction between the best team experience and those average or low performing teams. And just write them all down. And you might find 5, 10, 15 or 20 attributes. Just write them down. Now, here's where it becomes interesting. Again, if you look at the human doing and the human being, in one of the previous questions, I already started to talk about the IQ and the EQ, the functional and the relational. Here's why. When we look at organizations, also organizations exist to produce results, So therefore, you have to bring in your IQ. That's the functional part of it. And that's where you think about elements as what is the strategy, the vision, what are the year plans, tasks, roles, responsibilities, and so on. So again, this is the IQ base. This is what we would call the human doing part. Now, the second lens is every organization, team, and function, they exist out of people. And when you bring people together, you get dynamics, you start to talk about happiness, about functionality, about happiness, about conflicts, hopefully, again, healthy conflicts, how to work with diversity and inclusion, how do you celebrate success, and so on. And you might say this is much more EQ, emotional quotient based, much more relational, and this is what I would call the human being part. Now, here's where it becomes interesting. Hopefully, you have written down those attributes yourself about what the distinction between the best performing teams and those average or the low performing teams. Now, if you would put those elements that you have written down yourself, and you put it either on the left or on the right-hand side of your paper. Now, on the left-hand side, put all the attributes that are much more the human doing attributes, the functional attributes, the IQ-based attributes, the ones that directly contribute to results. And on the right-hand side, you write down all those attributes which are much more human being-oriented, emotional quotient-oriented, relational-oriented, people-oriented. Now, what I've seen, what we've seen as a company, wherever we've done, if you start writing down those attributes, and hopefully you will see the same, 1/3 of the attributes are on the left-hand side, the IQ, the human doing based, where 2/3 of those attributes are on the right-hand side, EQ, relational based, human being based. So here's where it becomes interesting. And that's also what I, in the book, call the paradox between intellect and emotions. They are absolutely equally important, and they are not. Well, they are not, because if you look at the list, the number of attributes that you have written down on the IQ or the human doing piece and the EQ human being piece, it's 1/3, 2/3. So therefore, they are not equally spread around. But why are they important as well? Because if I, as a manager, would lead you, and I would only lead you from the IQ, no EQ, no personal connections, just like focusing on tasks and results, you know, just asking how are you doing in comparison to your KPIs and so on, but there's no personal connection, most people will leave me as a manager at some point, because they don't feel the connection. By the way, this is also proven by the research of the American Institute called Gallup. People, they join a company because they believe in the products or in what they stand for, the culture, but they leave because of a lack of connection with the manager. So if I would only focus on the doing piece, no being piece at all, you would leave. Now, if I would only focus on the being piece, and I would only focus on, it's nice to be together, but nothing focusing on results, you know, we wouldn't get anywhere. I probably would get fired first, but also the team would be resigned, or people would also resign because they want to contribute to something. So you see, here's the paradox. Although IQ and EQ are equally important, you really need them both. Based on this question, what are the attributes of best teams? Based on the research we've done all over the world, 1/3, 2/3, we also see that they are not equally important. And I think that's the striking balance, or the paradox that is involved. So a lot of words, Thea. In short, back to your question, what's more important, intellect or emotions? They are absolutely equally important. And if you want to create the best performing teams, you should focus probably more on the emotions. Yet, it's so much easier to focus on the intellect, because that is the doing piece. That is short term. You can just say that's also more safe. I could say you achieved your goal or you didn't achieve your goal. Whereas if I focus on the emotions, by the way, which is a long-term investment, I will on the long term reach competitive advantage. But it also takes courage, and it's also sometimes harder. So they are equally important, the doing and the being, intellect and emotions. And I would say, if you really want to build a high-performing teams, then make sure that you certainly also deeply invest in emotions. Now, what do I see in reality? People tend to focus much more on the intellect, on the IQ. And the emotions and the EQ, they do it when they have time. So when you say, how do we strike the right balance between them? I would say at least start at least creating equal time to both the intellect as well as the emotions, both to the functional as well as the relational part of leadership.
Well, that's really fascinating, because we can see how we live in a result-driven world where everyone is focused on the intellect. And then if we really focus on emotions, that can have very long-term positive results. So yeah, I think it's a very fascinating. Yeah, I think it's a very fascinating topic. And people, of course, they can read more in the book. But then, yeah, now I need to move to my next question, which would be for any leaders who are now listening to us. So yeah. What would be your tips for them, those leaders who are looking to work on their connection quotient? Where should they begin?
Well, I think they should begin, what I know, is by acknowledging that you're both a human doing as well as a human being. So understand you have a functional responsibility as well as a relational responsibility. So you should focus both on your IQ and use your IQ as well as your EQ. So that also means when you develop yourself, make sure you develop both of them. Do not only focus on the functional outcomes and the best tactics and strategies to get the results done, but make sure you certainly invest also equal time in how to best leverage the relationship with people. So that also means, if you want to build, that you also have to accept that you yourself have emotions, but also the people around you. So don't be scared of it. And also when people are also in different emotional states, I think one of the best things that you can offer as a leader is just to be with them. You don't need to fix them. You don't need to change them. And when people are in emotions, also allow them to have emotions. Now, in order to do so, to be comfortable with emotions, you have to be comfortable with yourself, your own emotions. So that would be my third tip. As a leader, invest in also in understanding who you are as a person, as a leader, both from the functional and the relational. Understand your patterns. What are the patterns? You know, what are the patterns when you lead? What's the kind of leadership? And is that also the kind of leadership that is required by the people around you? People around you, we all have different psychological preferences and therefore different needs. So rather than leading from this is my way of doing it, can you also really slow down and start looking for what are the needs of the people around you? And can you tweak and adjust your style of leadership? Now, if you want to do so, it also takes courage to look inwards. And here's the good news. You don't have to do it all by yourself. Obviously, you can buy the book, The Connection Quotient, and through the 43 chapters and the personal stories that I will share, as well as the theory, as well as the examples and the exercises, it's a great way to really start exploring yourself and to start reflecting and introspecting. But I also believe that if you really want to build yourself, work with people around you. You don't need to do it all by yourself. So also start working with an internal or an external mentor or a coach, because they are able to reflect back on your behavior and the impact you have. And again, if you want to work with others, also look for what I believe is so important, is start working with what I call the emotional bank account. Again, it's not something that I developed myself, but again, it's coming from research. And it's actually also coming from Stephen Covey. Also start working on the emotional bank account. So it basically means, like, make sure that you keep supporting people around you by giving them compliments, by giving them acknowledgements, by also role modeling, like what's the kind of behavior that you would like to see within the organization. And also when you have it, share it with people. Do not only share it with an intellect by giving KPIs on how we should behave, but also talk about the bigger vision. What is it that you believe in? And build it with emotional words and emotional behavior from your end. So these are just a couple of tips. And again, in the book, in the 43 chapters, you will find so many more tips and exercises to start working on building your CQ.
Definitely. But thank you for sharing those tips. I think they're very useful for those listening to us today. So thank you very much, Marco, for spending some time today with me on Lit Radio Podcast. It was a very fascinating conversation, and I hope it will be useful for leaders. And I really urge them to buy the book, because I'm sure it will be very helpful for them.
Well, I would say thank you so much also for this radio interview. I really enjoy being on the podcast. And for all listeners, I would always say, if you have any further questions, you know, just look on the internet, on LinkedIn, feel free to connect with me. And next to buying the book, always feel free also to directly ask questions on LinkedIn. And I'll be more than happy to answer those.
Thank you so much for joining us today, and thanks everyone for listening. Don't forget to keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and at Lit Business Media on LinkedIn for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. We are now also on TikTok, so make sure you follow us at Lit Publishing. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.